What's going on, superstar? This is Alex Pardo. You're listening to another masterclass on the Flip Empire Show, episode 244.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Guys, what is going up? I have a fire podcast episode coming at you today with my friend, Mr. Kevin Bupp. If you guys don't know Kevin, the guy's just considered like one of the top guys, one of the top investors and educators when it comes to investing in mobile home parks. Not only is he an educator, he comes with a tremendous amount of experience, over 16 years in the business. Fellow podcaster, has one of the top iTunes rated podcaster, Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow podcast. Also has another podcast on mobile home parks. And I think what's really cool about this episode is that Kevin gets real vulnerable and very transparent about, you know, what he experienced during the crash in 2008. You know, he gets into detail as to like what happened, how he got in that position, what his mindset was, and then more importantly, like what he learned from it and how he came out of that. And then we kind of transition into, you know, he's someone that came with a lot of experience when it came to, you know, having a big, large single family rental portfolio. He owned multifamily properties. And, you know, about 2011, his plan was to dive back into multifamilies and had a conversation with a mentor that changed his thoughts. And he decided to go after mobile home parks. And, you know, here he is today, and he owns a lot of mobile home park communities and is just one of the experts and educators in the space. So really, really cool, just raw, authentic podcast interview with Kevin. Highly recommend you guys check it out. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Kevin Bupp, what's going on, my friend?
Alex, I'm doing awesome, bud. How about yourself, man? I'm looking forward to being here with you and your peeps.
Yeah, buddy. So thank you for the time, man. So you and I haven't known each other that long. You know, we met back in December at a mastermind. And man, it's been awesome getting to know you. I've known you just from, you know, obviously we both host podcasts. And guys, I definitely want to encourage you guys to connect. Check out Kevin's podcast, Investing for Cash Flow. One of the best podcasts out there, especially if you're focused on wealth and passive income. And, you know, so obviously Kevin's an expert when it comes to mobile home park investing, commercial investing, and we'll definitely like touch on that. But Kevin's just a real guy, you know, down to earth. We're pretty close in age. And actually, I don't know if you recall, Kevin, you and I sat at the same table in December. and it's cool because when you know someone from being the host of a podcast and you've listened to so many shows, you kind of feel like you get to know the person. And so Kevin was sitting next to me and I felt like I knew the dude. And then now getting to know you on an actual personal level has been really cool for me.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way, bud. I mean, I feel like you're as genuine as they come. So like, it's really easy to get to know you and to like you. And I felt like we had an immediate connection. So it's been great over the past year or so getting to know you a lot better.
I appreciate it, man. So hey, before we get into mobile home park investing, which is not a topic we've really done too many shows on, it's a very unique niche, something that really intrigues me. I want to kind of talk about, you know, the typical, I know so many people probably ask you, hey, how did you get involved in this business? How'd you get started? I kind of want to take a little bit of a slightly different approach and fast forward to 2008. Obviously, yep. 2008, most people are aware that, you know, the housing bubble and just the economy, everything that happened around that time. And you, you know, it was cool of you to kind of share with me that, you know, you went through some challenges, some trials during that time. So I already covered in the introduction a lot about like where you're at today in the business. So if we can kind of fast forward, if you don't mind, to 2008, maybe leading up to that point, kind of what the business looked like for you, how you were doing, and then maybe kind of get into what happened during that time for you, your business, your family, and then, you know, how you bounced back from it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd love to share that. And so leading up to 2008, I thought I was a cash flow investor, Alex. I mean, I thought I had the same mindset I do today, but now looking back, it really was a lot different. And so leading up to that point in time, just like a lot of folks, I got my start as a single family home investor. And so my mentor, though, wasn't a fixer and flipper. He would fix and flip when they ever needed additional capital to go buy more deals, but he was always about holding on to as many properties as possible and building a sustainable passive income to, you know, live the lifestyle you want to live. So that was his MO. And that's what I learned at a young age. And that's kind of the model I followed. And so leading up to 2008, I had a fairly large portfolio of single family property, rental properties in South Florida, mostly basically all the way down to Naples and then up this way. I'm in the Tampa Bay area. So we had them as far north as like Spring Hill, which is Hernando County. So we had a very, very wide market that we were in. And in addition to the single family properties, had also started acquiring multifamily properties, mostly smaller stuff like 24 and 36 unit properties throughout those years. And so 2008 was crippling for me. And, you know, we were very conservative. We'd buy everything. We were very strict on our buying criteria. We'd buy everything at 65 cents in the dollar minus repairs. And so going into 2008, we had a, on paper, we had a ton of equity in our single family rental portfolio. I'm talking like our average leverage was lower than 65. It was like hovering around 62% across the portfolio.
Wow.
So we didn't over leverage things. You know, they cash flowed, and I say they cash flow. I'm very cautious when I say that that portfolio cash flowed. It did, but I'll tell you that taxes and insurance in Florida will absolutely kill you. Yeah, they eat you alive. And so what happened is they cash flowed, but when times got tough in late 2006, early 2007, when times got tough and builders started having struggles, and that's really what killed our single family home businesses. Down, Cape Coral, Port Charlotte area, which is over on this coast, there was further than the eye could see, there were spec builders building rooftops, thousands of rooftops for a population that wasn't coming, but they were still building. That was back in the day when literally a pre-construction contract would get flipped three times before the thing even like broke ground, right?
I mean, remember, so insane those
crazy
times.
Time. Yeah. And so what happened is a lot of these builders had these brand new 322s or 422s that were literally brand new sitting there, and no one knew how long this crash was going to happen. Like, they didn't know how long it was going to last, right? And so some people were like, well, maybe it gets better in a year. And so if we can just make it through the year, right? Band-aid it through the year. And so a lot of these builders are renting these homes out to cover the construction loans, right? And so we had this mass exodus that occurred, which absolutely killed us. We lost a fairly decent percentage of our occupancy, about 18% of it, in a matter of like 6 months of our single family homes, because these builders were saying, hey, come rent this brand new 322 for, you know, $800 a month. And that's what we were renting a 30-year-old home for, you know, a 3-1.
Yeah, you couldn't compete.
No, couldn't compete at all. And so we had a mass exodus. It was horrific, because that was the cash flow went away. So in addition to the cash flow going away, at the same time, our equity, literally in a matter of 6 months, we were upside down on a majority of our properties, especially the ones that were down in that market. I mean, we were underwater, even though we had started out at like a 62% loan to value. We were underwater by the time like we really got into the heat of the recession. And so there was really there wasn't an option at that point, Alex. It was either take the savings I had and keep making mortgage payments each month, literally coming out of pocket with pretty significant chunks of money on properties that were upside down, or just cut the cord. And it literally got to the point where it was like, I'm literally going to be homeless in a very short period of time if I have to keep writing these large checks each and every month. And so it was a strategic move. It was one I didn't want to do. I tried to work with a lot of these banks in the beginning, but back then when this first happened, banks weren't even prepared for the onslaught of foreclosures that were about to occur. They weren't interested in doing workouts. And so I had many challenging conversations. I had attorneys involved on my side to help us try to negotiate workouts. We did a few in the beginning, but not many at all. And so it became a situation where I had to make the hard decision of cutting the cord and defaulting on practically 95% of my single family home portfolio. Wow. Just letting it go. And it was tough times. It was ugly. My credit that I'd always relied on forever, you know, went down to a sub below 500. You know, my primary residence was in foreclosure at that point in time. And all my credit cards started shutting me off. Credit cards I had never missed a payment on. I had never missed a payment on any consumer debt, but they started seeing me defaulting on my mortgages and they shut me down. So I literally went from having hundreds of thousands of dollars a line of credit on credit cards, perfect credit, to literally sub 500 credit score, tons of judgments and foreclosures, lawsuits against me, and literally access to zero credit. I mean, Discover kept me and my Bank of America card kept me, but they lowered my limits from like $50,000 to like $500. So practically non-existent. I had to learn how to live on the cash I had, and that was it. And I tell you, the most humbling part of that experience, Alex, was I just met who is now my wife. I met her during this, which was crazy. I met her just before I made the strategic decision to default on these things. Mm-hmm. And she was in commercial banking. This is a good part of the story because she's with me today and she stuck with me through some really challenging times.
What a blessing.
She was in commercial banking doing a lot of projects. And as we all know, commercial typically trends behind residential. And so it hadn't hit full impact commercial yet. And so she was still doing big development loans and her business, she had the best year ever in 2008, right? And I was literally having the worst year ever. And I never really gave her direct insight. We'd only been dating for 3 or 4 months and I knew she was going to be long-term. I could just tell like she was the one, but I was afraid that if she found out how bad things really were, that I wouldn't be the one for her, right? And I was living on the water down in St. Pete Beach, had a boat. I mean, like it was like, looked like I had everything right, but it was all wrong and it was crumbling at the seams. And so I told her literally the day before I was about to miss my first batch of mortgage payments. And she didn't get scared away. She stuck with me. I thought she was going to go running for the hills and she didn't. And, you know, fast forward, you know, a couple of years after that, we got married. We've got two beautiful children today, and she stuck with me through some very, very challenging times. But where I was going with that story, Alex, and I'm sorry to digress, my mind's all over the place, you know. So, what happened when it got really, when it became real for me was I told her what was going on. About 2 weeks later, we went to get breakfast. I took my truck across the street to get it washed. It was like a $20 car wash. And at that point, I was living on a debit card, right? The money I had in the bank was the money that I had. That was it. And I had no more credit or anything like that. And I walked across after we had breakfast to pay for the car. Again, like $20. It was probably even less than that. And I gave the guy my debit card, which I knew I had cash in that account. It was one of like two checking accounts I had. And I gave it back. He's like, that was declined. I'm like, oh, that's not the case. Like, I know that that works because I have money in there, right?
Yeah.
He ran it again. Nope, declined. I called the bank right there just thinking that it had to be a problem. And one of the lenders had already garnished one of my bank accounts. wiped it out. Literally, there was like a $600 deficiency there. And in front of this girl that I, you know, thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And I had to ask her in a very humbling, you know, like vulnerable manner, can you pay for this? Right. Because I don't have any money on me. In any event. So I'll let you interject.
I got to stop here for a second because I'm not BSing you and the audience. When I tell you that listening to your story, I find myself kind of getting chills, and that's not like hyperbole. I'm literally getting chilled because I'm putting myself in your shoes during that time. And I can only imagine kind of what you were going through and what a humbling experience that must have been. And so like, first off, you know, I publicly commend you for number one, just being so vulnerable, transparent, because whether you realize it or not, Kevin, like you sharing this with people, there are people out there that are in a similar spot, maybe a worse spot or maybe not, you know, but they're struggling financially or they're struggling with things in their personal life and their business. And, you know, to hear you come from that to where you are today, and I know we'll touch on that here briefly, it's inspiring. You know what it is? I mean, it's really cool of you to just kind of open up and be transparent publicly about it. But just know that I think that's really going to strike a chord with a lot of people and inspire them that, hey man, you know, you're a regular dude, you know, you're smart, you're successful. If you could climb out of that hole, you know, hopefully it inspires people that they can too. So just wanted to kind of throw that out there, but just so that people have perspective, how big was this single family rental portfolio that you had?
I had 122 homes at that point and just shy of 500 multifamily units.
Wow. Okay. So what was your mind frame as you were going through this? Like, were you resilient? Were you like, I'm going to get out of this? Did you ever hit like just a moment where you're like, I can't deal with this anymore? And it was just, you were devastated. Like, I'm trying to get into your brain and just what you were feeling at that time.
That's a great question. No, I wasn't resilient at first. I mean, I'd never gone through anything like this. I was in my late 20s. I mean, I was, even though I had been successful, I mean, this was an entirely new chapter, right? I had never dealt with this. And the problem, I think, one of the bigger problems, Alex, is that all the people I knew that were immediate to me that were also very successful in real estate in the Florida market, they were going through the same challenges and they hadn't been through it either. And so I didn't feel like there was really a support mechanism there at all, because everyone I would talk to was always doom and gloom about, oh, I'm in foreclosure with all my properties and I've got, you know, banks running after me and I just lost my primary residence and my car got repossessed. And so it was really hard to keep a positive outlook on just real estate in general. We all know the fundamental the fundamentals of, you know, you want to buy when there's blood in the streets, right? Mm-hmm. Buy low, sell high. Right? It's really hard to think through that and actually step out of the bubble that you're in and actually realize that there's opportunity when literally it's your blood in the street. Wow. So
yeah, I get it.
I tell you that what I did is, I'm not going to say I stuck my head in the sand, but I kind of did for a number of years. I started a few other businesses outside of real estate. The one thing I could control in my life at that point was my health and fitness. Like that became the most important factor for me, because I was like, if I can control anything, that's the one thing. I can't control my credit anymore, can't control creditors, can't control anything else about my life other than health and fitness, right? And staying positive and thinking about other ways to make income, you know, make an income. Because I didn't think that real estate was the right way at that point in time. I should have been buying, looking back in hindsight, and I should have been ramping back up and, you know, just literally buying up a storm, right? I feel like I missed a number of years of opportunity, but it is what it is, right? Second time around, that won't be the case.
Yeah.
And so I started a few other businesses, health and fitness related, and ran those businesses for about 3.5 years. But there was this burning desire inside of me still. And those businesses were successful, but not nearly as successful as what I had in real estate. I mean, they put food on the table, they paid the bills, but it wasn't, I had no interest in really growing them to the size that would be substantial enough to really, you know, compete with what I was making in real estate. And I didn't really have as much of a passion for those as I did real estate. And so this fire was still burning. And sometime in like 2011, I made the decision that I was going to get back in. Like I was going to dive back in, but I wasn't going to buy single family anymore. Like I knew that it took a long time, a lot of energy. I wasn't married, didn't have kids back at that point when I was building that initial business. So the second time around, I felt like it was going to be much more efficient to scale with multifamily properties. Like I knew that's where I wanted to go. I could build a much larger empire a lot faster with multifamily properties and really achieve real passive income, not with the single family homes I had that were literally getting killed by taxes and insurance and just were very inefficient to manage.
Yeah.
And so I had like a year of exploratory time where I went and I talked to everyone that was either in the multifamily space before the crash and they made it through. And then I also spent a lot of time meeting others that had got in when there was blood in the streets. And I call them new investors, right? They didn't make it through the crash. They started buying after. And I was just trying to figure out what the landscape looked like, right? Lending was completely different. Back in 2011, there was still blood in the streets. Lending was still very tight. It was a completely different world than what it was in 2006 and 2007, right? Prior to the crash.
Man, you could fog a mirror back then and you can get a $500,000 loan, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And so during that period of time, I was introduced to a guy by the name of Randy. And Randy was in the finance world for 30 years in primarily financing mobile home parks across the country for a large bank. And Randy retired and he had been retired for 7 or 8 years when I met him and started buying RV and mobile home parks in here in Florida. And I just had lunch with him, no interest whatsoever in his business. I mean, I love meeting new people, right? Your net worth is your network. And so I'm always trying to meet new people and surround myself by other successful folks, and met Randy, had a 2-hour lunch with him and left that meeting with a newfound focus, not of multifamily anymore. He completely shifted my mindset and I was not prepared for that. But he put me on to mobile home parks, which is a niche I never had ever considered before. And I dedicated the next year to buying my very first mobile home park and either proving or disproving, you know, that investment vehicle. And
incredible.
You know, fast forward a number of years and that's all we've been buying since.
So let me kind of put a pause there for a second. Yeah. So that meeting you had with Randy, you went in there kind of with a game plan. I'm going to be focused on multifamilies, right? And you had already had some experience. You mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, 24 to 32 units. So you had some experience there. You knew what it took to find and acquire these multifamily properties. Obviously, correct, you know the benefits of that. What was it about that meeting? Like what did Randy communicate to you that had you walking out of there with a completely, I don't want to say completely different focus because it's still commercial, but you know, you saying, hey, I've never even considered mobile home parks. I don't even know really how they operate. What was it that he shared with you that said, hey, this is the direction I want to go in versus multifamily, which, you know, is probably more popular, more well-known?
Sure, sure. No, that's a great question. You know, first and foremost, my business has always been in the affordable housing space. So all the single family properties I've ever owned, all the apartment complexes has always catered to, you know, the good, hardworking blue collar folks, right? You know, the C plus class type properties. Like that's always been my niche. So I know that demographic really well. And I know that there's ever growing demand for it in our country and we're not serving that demand, right? And so I like the affordable housing space first and foremost. And so in the apartment space, both when I was in it and also moving forward, I had intended on buying, you know, value add C grade apartment complexes. And so I just wanted to put that out there so everyone has a kind of a foundation of like just my background and my experience, sure. What types of properties I typically own. And so, you know, Randy, there's a couple big things, right? And we could talk about this. This is an entirely separate show even. We could talk about mobile home parks and why we love them so much. But there were some really big points that he threw out there that really just stuck in my head. The biggest one, this is the one that literally just made me like drop my bread as I was eating on the table. It's like mobile home parks, Kevin, it's the only asset class of all real estate. Self-storage, office, retail, multifamily. It's the only asset class that has a diminishing supply. I said, what do you mean, Randy? He's like, well, each and every year, there are more mobile home parks that either get shut down or redeveloped into something that's a higher and better use because of the location, you know, where they're at. It's maybe more, you know, desirable for a retail shopping center or something of those means. But more get shut down or redeveloped every year than are built. And the reason being is that mobile home parks have a negative stigma, right? Everyone knows that. They've got a bad stereotype attached to them, and they shouldn't, because just like, look, I always like to compare it to multifamily properties. And this is what he did to me. He said, Kevin, you can go anywhere in any city and you can find a multifamily apartment complex that you would not go into at night. It's dangerous, right? Full of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. It's not a very desirable place.
Yeah.
In that same city, on the other side of town, you could surely find a apartment complex that is A grade, high class, with, you know, most of the residents that make six figures or higher, right? He's like, I mean, yeah, that's absolutely right. He's like, the same exists in mobile home parks. But municipalities don't see it that way. Is that there? Obviously, there's a number of bad operators in our space, just like every space. But for some reason, the negative stigma really stuck with mobile home parks, and so municipalities, they don't like them. They don't want it in their backyard. They don't want these things to be built. And so he said, go to any city, municipality across the country, and pick 100 of them. He said the chances of you getting approval if you went in there to build a new one, saying, "Hey guys, I own this 10 acres in town. I'd like to build a mobile home park." He said maybe one out of that 100 would you actually get approval to build something. It would actually have to be high end. It wouldn't be able to be an affordable type community. He's like, so these things aren't being built. He said, so there's a huge barrier to entry to buy the ones that are out there. Pick the ones that are in really good markets. And what you don't have to ever worry about, for the most part, is someone buying a piece of land down the road and becoming your competitor. He's like, you're insulated from that risk. And that risk is in every other type of real estate out there. Whether you're buying multifamily properties or self-storage, you always have to worry about, is there a available land for a developer to come in and build competition, right? Sure. To be my competition. So that was a big one. I love that. I love barriers to entry. Another one is like, you know, comparing apples to apples. If you take the same, you know, same city, same metro market, a C-grade apartment complex and a C-grade mobile home park, you know, approximately the same size, serving a very similar demographic, you should expect anywhere between a 150 to 200 basis point yield premium over the buying the mobile home park versus the multifamily property. Today, it's actually probably even a little bit more than that, because multifamily properties, man, they're trading at like sub 5 caps in a lot of major markets. It's crazy. Incredible. And so the returns, comparing apples to apples, you should be able to expect, if you're buying right, a much higher return on your capital buying a mobile home park than buying a multifamily property in a similar market. Another big thing that he threw out there that I just thought was like absolutely brilliant. He's like, Kevin, most mobile homes that move into a community, once they're in there, they never leave. Like it was like 97%. I don't know where he got the statistic from, but like 97% of mobile homes that once they move into community, so they leave the factory, they move into a community, they stay there forever. They stay there until they die, right? The mobile home itself does a structure, because he said the average mobile home, he used the single wide as an example. The average single wide costs on average to move from one location to another community and to reset it back up, like to get it tied back down and skirted, $5,000 to $6,000 to move that thing and get it reset again in another location. He said the average person that lives in a mobile home will never have $5,000 or $6,000, and even if they did, they would have something better to spend it on than to move their home now that's worth maybe $15,000 or $20,000.
Sure, I can totally see that.
And so you've got this insulation of even from having a lot of turnover, like an apartment complex. So the average person in an apartment complex, if they want to get up and leave, in the middle of the night, they can put their mattress on the roof, they can pack their bags, throw them in the car, and they can be out, right? Like they seriously can be out very quickly.
Right.
In a mobile home park, it's not that easy. They can't hook up their trailer to their Suburban to pull it out. Like it takes a much bigger vehicle to move one of those homes, and it's a bigger process because they're anchored down to the ground.
Yeah.
What typically happens in a community is if someone wants to move, they sell their home, just like would happen in a normal subdivision, a single family home subdivision. They put their home up for sale, someone else buys it, that person moves in and continues paying the lot rent that's there. And so like you don't have the type of turnover or gaps of downtime that you would have in a single family rental or a multifamily rental. Like someone moves out of an apartment, now you got to do a turn, right? It might be empty for 2 months while you go in there and put paint and carpet in and get it freshened back up and have to re-advertise it. And in our situation, there's very rarely, there are circumstances where there's, you know, people just get up and leave and they haven't sold it. And then we have to go through a different process to gain ownership of that home and then sell it. But for the most part, the transaction occurs without us being involved. And all of a sudden we just have a new renter that's paying us lot rent and never miss a beat. So those are like the top three. There's multiple other reasons as well. But those are the big ones. I was like, wow, Randy. And he kept going and going for another like hour. And he kept telling me additional things that I didn't know about mobile home parks. And I'm like, I got to buy one and figure this out.
That's incredible, man. So after now having owned and operated a bunch of these, like what on the flip side, what are like some of the biggest challenges with owning and operating these mobile home parks?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest challenge, this is by far the number one challenge. Now, and this doesn't necessarily apply to just buying one mobile home park. This is assuming that you're going to get into this business and you're going to scale and you're going to own numerous communities. The biggest challenge is that unlike multifamily or unlike single family, you could pretty much go to any market in the country and you could find competent property management companies, third-party property management companies that have a lot of experience, way more experience than you'll ever have in running that asset, managing that asset. In our space, that is not the case. There are literally on two hands, I can count the number of competent property management companies across the U.S. are involved in this space. There might be other little mom and pops here and there that say they can manage a park, but these things are unique. It's a different business model, and just the average property management company will not know all the intricacies in order to run these efficiently. And so the challenge...
You're talking less than 10, Kevin, across the country that are competent property managers?
It's funny. I didn't even know there were that many, but we hired someone in our operations department recently, director of operations, and I gave him the task of calling the top 100 operators in our space and asking them, finding out, do they do third-party management that they don't advertise? So I gave him this project to find out like who else, like, you know, that no one knows of, that's under the radar, actually manages, you know, on a fee, you know, on a third-party fee basis. And so literally he's doing that project now, and we still are less than 10 after having some phone conversations, the ones that are truly competent, that have a lot of experience in the space. And even then, most of those are somewhat segmented in different regions of the country. So they're not like nationwide.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of options there. And so what you have to do, here's the challenging part, and here's the barrier as far as getting into this business and actually scaling a big business out of it. Not only do you have to build a acquisition side of your business, but you also have to build a property management company, which is its own separate business, right? I mean, it's its own separate business model, payroll, and there's lots of moving parts in our business. And so that's a challenge. It's a challenge to find the right talent and to do it efficiently as you're growing your acquisitions to simultaneously have this property management company that's managing assets all across the country. Because it kind of leads me to my second point of some of the downsides. There's not many mobile home parks in the U.S.
Right. How many would you say are, how many mobile home park communities are there in the U.S.? Do you have like any idea ballpark?
Yeah, someone gave me the number. It's like 55,000. And anything more than two mobile homes on one piece of land is classified as a mobile home park. So I would actually, Alex, I'd probably have to say that there's probably more along the lines of like 25,000. That would be, you or I would look at them and say, oh, that's a mobile home park, right? They're big enough to where, you know, they've got like paved roads and they have a semblance of community. Now, our database, like we've been building a database. We've researched every market in the country. And our database consists of about 7,000. And that's of a certain size. You know, they're in a good market that's got good, stable employment, the economy's strong. There's lots of mobile home parks and rural markets where you probably just wouldn't want to buy, right? It wouldn't be a good investment.
I have to think, man, from just like, so the marketing side of my brain is like kind of turned on. So you know that we're on the single family side and we primarily wholesale, et cetera. And so for us, like, you know, we send out 20, 30, 40,000 postcards a month. I have to think in your space, it's a big advantage that it's a much smaller pond that you can just go like laser target marketing at these 7,000.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, so I have to think that's, I mean, you could be negative and say the other side, oh, well, that means everybody's competing for the same 7,000. I kind of look at it different. If you're a really, really good marketer, it's got to be easier to get in front of the right mobile home park owners and operators, right?
Bingo. That's our secret sauce, bud. Fortunately and unfortunately, you can't just go buy a list in our space like you can in your space. Like you can't, there's not companies out there that you can't go to List Source and get a comprehensive listing of all the mobile home parks in the US. And even if you could buy that list, it's not going to have the actual the owner's information, right? It's going to have the entity information. You're still going to have to spend a lot of time, a lot of legwork digging into it. And so we've literally, over the last 4 years, we've been building a proprietary database, and it takes a lot of work. We got a team of four VAs in the Philippines that have worked for us for 4 years, and we've only got 7,000 so far fully mapped out. And that's like pretty in-depth research in each one of these markets. And so that is our secret sauce. We're really good at the marketing side. Majority of our leads, 90% of our leads come as direct to owner, and you know they're off market. Whereas most of our competitors are relying on brokers, just like you do in the multifamily space. Most of them are relying on brokers to bring deals. And in today's environment, once something goes to the general marketplace, it's getting bid up. I mean, you're paying a premium for it. And so we do buy through brokers, but we get much better deals for the most part by buying these things off market. And so, yeah, that is our secret sauce. And that's what really separates us from the other guys in the industry.
Yeah. Well, listen, Kevin, I want to start to kind of wind this down. And guys, you know, Kevin has correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, you offer Mobile Home Park Academy, right? Where it's just more education, in-depth education on, you know, how to be a mobile home park investor, et cetera, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it's basically our business model in a box is what it is.
Okay, perfect. So look, impossible to cover everything with mobile home park investing in a 30 to 45 minute audio, but just for people that, you know, let's assume now you're wearing Randy's hat and there's people listening to this episode and saying, this is an asset class I've never really considered and I'm intrigued by it. What, aside from connecting with you, which is the obvious, like what's step one, step two, step three, and then we'll kind of start to wrap up the show from there.
Yeah, there's not a ton of education out there on the topic, but I will tell you that I've got two podcasts that I host. One I've been doing for nearly 5 years, but I started a mobile home park specific podcast about 2 years ago, and I think there's about 90 episodes up. And I would start there, right? Go there, listen to every episode. We go very granular on a number of the shows about literally how we build our database, you know, the types of marketing we do to these off-market deals, how we operate our communities, you know, how we add value to them. All those types of things we cover in our podcast. So there's like literally, I don't know, 80 or so hours worth of content that's out there free that we put together the last 2 years. So I would start there. There's other folks that have some education materials on this topic. They've got some books out there. So grab books, read, and dive in. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't want to act as like you need to buy our course, but I mean, if you really, there's not a lot of options out there. So yeah, Unless you can find another mentor that's in this space already, like close to where you live and can, you know, kind of take you underneath their wing, then really the only other way to do it is by either, you know, buying into what we offer or, you know, one of the other similar operators in our space offer, you know, and actually taking that leap. But I would say there's enough free information out there, first and foremost, that will give you enough to make a decision of if you think it's the right fit for you, right? Sure. You got to make sure that it's the right fit for your personality and really what you want to accomplish as an investor. And so that's where I would start, Alex.
Okay, bingo. And what's the name of the Mobile Home Park podcast? Because I know obviously you have Investing for Cashflow with Kevin Bupp. And then what's the name of the Mobile Home Park one?
We kept it really simple. It's called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast.
Beautiful. Hey, short and sweet, man. I like it. Okay. And guys, just so you know, we'll include links to both of those podcasts in addition to Kevin's Mobile Home Park Academy in the show notes page. So highly encourage. Again, I haven't known Kevin all that long. It's coming up on a year now, but you know, from all our communication, I mean, just listening to his podcast, even before him and I got a chance to personally meet, I mean, the dude's the real deal. Obviously, I love the fact that, you know, Kevin, you're so genuine, you're so transparent. You've had the downs, you've had the ups. And I think there's a lot of value in just having come from that perspective and having that experience. I think it's made you the man and the entrepreneur and, you know, father, husband you are today is, You know, going through those challenges, man, and maybe that's kind of a way to put a bow on the episode is, you know, one of the questions I always ask guests is, you know, rewind the clock 15, 20 years, knowing what you know now, what's the one piece of advice you would give yourself? So I kind of want to twist that a little bit. What's the biggest learning lesson you had going through what you went through in 2008? And then what's the, like, what advice would you give people having been through your experience?
Yeah, I'd say one of the biggest lessons that I learned during that period of time was how I always thought I was really creative. I mean, I definitely have structured some very creative real estate transactions, but as you had mentioned, if you could fog a mirror back then, you could get financing, right? And so that it's all relative. That's all people knew, right? I mean, I'd only been investing really heavily since 2000. I really got started in 2000, but didn't start heavily buying property until like 2002, 2003. And so I only had four or five years of run up before everything fell apart. And so I was still a virgin investor, right? That's all I knew is easy credit, very easy to get loans, easy to raise capital. And so when all that got taken away, my credit also went away and I could no longer rely on that. And so it was tough to swallow for a period of time, but I learned how to not rely on credit and how to get even more creative, how to sell the story, you know, pitch the, you know, like the first mobile home market we bought, my credit still was below 500 and I got a private lender on board with the deal. So I learned how to basically sell myself, sell my skill sets and sell the deal and just literally forget about credit. Like credit is not necessary. I don't have the ability or the luxury to go lean on it right now. And so I got to figure out another way. And so it just, it made me very resilient, made me very resourceful. And that's the lesson. I didn't know what the lesson was, but that was one of the big lessons I took away from that period of time. And today I think things through completely differently than what I did back then. You know, credit's there. I have credit again, thank God. But it's not something that if it went away, that I would feel like my business would suffer or that it would implode. I would be able to figure it out and I would get resourceful. And so that's a big lesson. And I forget the second question. If you wouldn't mind asking me that again, Alex.
Yeah, no, I mean, you pretty much covered it. It's like, you know, what's the one piece of advice, you know, rewinding the clock, knowing what you know now, like you would have given, you know, your younger self, but you kind of pretty much touched on it.
Yeah. And also the other advice I'd give myself, and this is not really related to the crash, but buy larger properties. You know, everyone's got the, and that's one of the reasons I started my Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast, you know, 5 years ago was most of us start in single family. That's kind of the normal progression of things. You start in single family and then you start buying, you know, multifamily and you might look at other commercial properties. I would say that it's, and it's primarily due to the number one, commercial real estate is kind of mysterious and it's intimidating, right? It's completely different, you know, vocabulary associated with it. Brokers, commercial brokers act completely differently than real estate, residential real estate agents. But I would say that if I had someone that would have taught me commercial and told me that sometimes it's even easier to get into bigger deals than it is to buy one single family home, I sure as heck would have started buying larger properties back then, whether it be multifamily or other types of commercial real estate. I would have made the leap a lot faster.
Got it. Okay. Beautiful, man. Well, hey, Kevin, look, again, I want to acknowledge you, man. I really can't thank you enough for just taking the time and opening up people's eyes, sharing your experience and kind of educating us on mobile home parks, because I think you're right. A lot of people have that perceived negative stigma, but it's such a unique asset class. And, you know, some of the things you shared from your, you know, your meeting with Randy many, many years ago are things I didn't even know or hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm. And my guess is that a lot of people are kind of in the same boat. So where's the best place? I mean, we already talked about Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast, your mobile home park podcast, the Academy. Where's the best place to connect with you?
Yeah. So my email, my personal email is kevin@kevinbupp.com. And then if anyone wants to learn more about our companies, like the investment arm of our company that buys mobile home parks, that company is called Sunrise Capital Investors and the website sunrisecapitalinvestors.com. So you can reach me through email or through sunrisecapitalinvestors.com. And those two places, you'll be able to track me down pretty easily.
Sweet, brother. Well, hey, man, again, I appreciate you. And I know we'll be seeing each other here pretty soon. So just thanks for hopping on, man. It's been awesome connecting with you again.
Alex, thanks for having me on, brother. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun and I definitely look forward to connecting soon, my friend.
All right. Have a great one. And guys, I look forward to the next masterclass. Again, if this is a space that you're interested in exploring, educating yourself on, you know, start with Kevin's podcast, check him out, and then take that next step and reach out if it's something that you want to dig a little deeper into. So I appreciate you and I'll catch you in the next one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.